Welcome to Retouchup's interview series, where we get to hear from some very talented photographers and how they turned their photography business into a success. My name is Trevor Black, and I'll be your host. We are super excited that we get to speak with Douglas Fry today. Douglas's photographic career began in advertising at the leading fashion house Burberry before he moved to the independent newspaper group. He left the independent to become a freelance news and features photographer, with his work regularly appearing in the Times, Independent, Observer, Spectator, and many others. Douglas founded Piranha Photography in 1993 and currently shoots a lot of annual reports, advertising, and weddings throughout UK and Europe. He is married with two children and living in Oxford, has all his own teeth, is younger than he looks, and is very kind to animals. Douglas, welcome. It's great to have the chance to speak with you today.
It's great. I do have more of my own teeth. That's very important.
Fantastic. No, man, I read that and I was like, that's good stuff, you know. I don't even have all of my teeth, so that's awesome.
That's right, yeah.
No, yeah, I actually was very... intrigued by the name Piranha. Where did this idea kind of originate from? I got to ask.
That's a very good question. That is many years ago when I was a student, I had a real stuffed piranha on the mantelpiece.
What?
So I thought it'd be quite a cool thing, because it was just when the digital came along, I had Piranha Bite, and it was B-Y-T-E. See what I've done there?
Oh, I see.
And it's just... Yeah, but the snag is no one can spell it. That's the trouble. It's piranha like the fish, which is P-I-R-A-N-H-A. But you get a whole bunch of different permutations on that spelling. So that's the only snag. But it is unusual, so people do remember it from that point of view.
Oh, it's true, because immediately as soon as I saw it, the fish jumped into my mind, and I was like, oh, I don't hear that. Usually it's just like someone's last name, photography.
Last name,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Exactly right. So it's photography of bite to give it a bit of edge. Kind of funny play on words there with the word digital.
No, I love that. Thanks for that background information. That's great. And then also, just from what I was able to kind of read and research, you have quite the strong opinion from what I gather about the camera you use. And I understand you've been using a Leica camera for about 30 years. Is that right? And just kind of curious.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, just curious. You know, what makes a camera so special to you? 30 years is a long time.
In fairness, I went digital in the year 2000, and there wasn't obviously a Leica offering there, so I had to go to nothing wrong with it, but I had to go to Canon for a while, but then Sony came along a little while later, and I knew that with a small adapter you could use Leica lenses on a Sony, so I did that, went manual focus. I've been manual focus really for the last 15 years or so, and then I was suddenly realizing on the Sony cameras, whenever I put the Leica lenses on, in my view, these things are often subjective, the images are far crisper, the colors are great, the accuracy is great. And I thought, well, why am I... But the edges of the frame has like a smear and lens aberration. So I thought, if I try, and back at the time, it was like a M240, so I go back to my Leicas again, tried an M240, and all those aberrations disappeared. And all the lenses were sharp corner to corner. And had great, just great colors and everything. So that was it. So then I sold everything. I went back to my rangefinders for all my work, and that's still true to this day. I still have an SL2S, but I've got about 5 rangefinders, I think, somewhere knocking around. So, they're just great, very simple cameras, focusing fast. You can focus on anything. You can focus on people say, how do you manage? I wear glasses. How do you manage focus on someone's eye, for example? Actually, it is just practice, and even with a 90mm, I was getting as many out of focus, say, as someone with an autofocus camera on a busy day, one or two maybe, and that was it. So, but they're so small, you see, tiny, you can put them in your jean pocket.
Holy cow.
You can try doing that with a Canon 50mm 1.2.
In a really big pocket.
You'd be having to grab really, cargo pants. It would look a bit strange as well. So, just a small little lens in your pocket. So then, see if I'm shooting. Really shoot so many weddings anymore, but you could go with the suit on, have 2 cameras and a lens in your pocket, and you're good for the day. It's great. Wow. Yeah.
So it's quite practical for that too. Travel.
Traveling. Yeah, I travel a lot around Europe, and just having a smaller case and everything just rammed in, they're pretty tough. lenses and cameras, so you can get bounced around.
Yeah,
so I never really looked back on some of my lenses. I've had about 25 years, I guess.
That's phenomenal.
They're great.
Incredible. No, you found your thing and you went for it and it's working well for you. That's great. So now we kind of have a little bit of background on you and the cameras that you're using. And then kind of shifting gears just slightly to kind of now focus on more running together, running a business, putting it together, because it's a lot of work. stress levels rise and fall all the time. But from your perspective, what are some of the top things, in your opinion, other photographers should know when they're trying to run their business and make it successful? Why have you become so successful?
Yes, the important thing is to know how to manage a business, and that's really the key thing. I mean, many photographers in London, only I can only refer to London really. There's about, say, every year, there's probably about 15,000 new photographers, I'd guess.
Hmm.
And a year later, 99% of them decided, quite sensibly, to do something else. Because you just run out of friends to ask favors from, friends who are getting married, say, and the little local businesses you can find. Mm-hmm. And that all dries up. And then you've got to find some way of getting more work. And then that's going to be sustainable on an ongoing basis. So you're going to establish relationships. And then, obviously, you want to get clients and then keep them, like, forever, basically. So our client base is probably about 350, 400 clients in total. And some of them maybe only commission me for a day a year.
Mm-hmm.
But then it all adds up, you see. So maybe another one's only a day a year. Some clients book 2 days a month. Every month in advance, a year in advance. So then you're suddenly finding, well, now I probably shoot every single day. And there's a few days I don't shoot, but I mean, it's rare. So last year we had about 340 shoots, I guess.
Right on.
No, that was just me.
Right.
A couple of colleagues. So there's quite a few shoots, yeah. So you have to keep track of it. And then the next thing is efficiency. You have to be efficient on your shoot. So everything is, that's what I particularly like is everything is manual. Manual shutter speed, manual aperture, manual color balance. The flash is set manually, never use TTL because it'll reassess the images all the time as it goes along. So the post-production can be a little bit more, sort of like every single one might be, have to adjust it individually. So if it's like a shoot in a studio environment, everything's set manually, color balance. When you get them into Lightroom or Capture One, there's very little to do, little tweaking to do. You sort of maybe glance through and do check, there's no problems, but 99% of the time, you've done it, an hour and a half, exporting the files, backing them up, and then off to the client. And that's been done every single day. So I tend to do a shoot, maybe download as I go along, or if I can't, download at the end of the shoot, process that evening, and do all the adjustments I feel I need, and then export them to Dropbox, all the DNGs. They're picked up by my wife here in the office, and she runs them through her Macs here, just tweak the colors as per the brief. Maybe it's a specific magazine, or maybe it's a specific website or annual report, and they have a certain treatment, and then they go off to the client. So then I'm fresh again for the next day. I can start with a clear camera and keep shooting again.
Yeah, right now.
So that efficient workflow is very important.
The efficient workflow. And you mentioned that, you know, you've built up this really big client base that, you know, you're now kind of, even if it's just once a year, I mean, because of how big your client base is, that's okay because of how many shoots you're still able to do. So what have you done to build up that client base? I mean, what were the ways that you marketed yourself? Was it a lot of, you know, word of mouth? Was it online advertising? Or what kind of ways did you go about it?
That's a good question. It evolved over the years. Because some clients I've had for 15 years, so the way I got them in those days may not be relevant today, because you wouldn't write them a letter anymore. I think maybe you would. I mean, it'd be more of a analog kind of process. But nowadays, actually, funnily enough, over lockdown was a good example. I obviously didn't get any, there weren't any shoots going on. But so we decided to, our local Oxford Council were allocating grants for small businesses, so about £3,000 or £4,000 that we couldn't have, but we could allocate it to someone who could help us. bit of a bizarre thing, but anyway, we went with it. We said to a PR guy, can we have some PR? We'd never done it before. So he said, yes, you can, but you need to write articles. You need to write articles about your work and the things you like shooting and things you don't like shooting and anything you can think of. But he said, I want 40 articles, 2,000 words each. So I had a couple of years to do this, so I'm not a journalist, so I had to like put my head down and just think about a topic, maybe it's corporate photography, and write 2,000 words about it. And then send them off to this guy. He would then reframe it in the voice of the magazine. So American Photo would be a different kind of style of writing to maybe Amateur Photographer here in the UK, a bit different style of writing. So he would tweak it to match the style of American Photo and accompany it with some photographs and send it off. And of course, couldn't believe it when our first one was published. And I thought, well, that's amazing, you've got 3 or 4 pages in a magazine. Yeah. But then by the end of lockdown, all 40 were published globally around the world.
Wow.
So that made an enormous difference to SEO, for example, which is obviously a key thing these days.
Yeah, definitely.
As much as we don't like it, it's there. And so then, so that's what we did. And then other than that, we do a lot of marketing. We always stay in touch with clients, always. Even a regular client, it's very easy for someone sitting at a desk in an office who suddenly gets an approach by a friend of a friend. You know, he's a photographer too, or she's a photographer. So you're going to just keep in touch with them, make sure you're always front of mind. Could be something simple, like a quick phone call. Could be going out for a coffee with them, go and meet them. Oh, actually, just send we have some postcards made. Each postcard, we have about 10 different images on postcards. Huh. So I send them a different postcard every time. So they get a new one. And when I go around to their offices, you can see them all stuck to corporate boards and stuff like that.
That's awesome. So those three things of like either giving them a phone call, see if they want to go out for coffee, even sending them a postcard. Because in my mind, I was like, yeah, I wonder how he's keeping in touch with them. Because the first thing that jumped in my mind was, is he maybe sending emails? Or so that's really cool that there was actually three different things.
Yeah. That's right. Sometimes it is an email. It depends on the client, really. Because sometimes the client might be abroad, and maybe they're based in Germany or something. So I mean, maybe a phone call is tricky on timing, something like that. But or they maybe just prefer an email, and they just, or maybe through LinkedIn, maybe send them a little message. Make sure you've got something to say.
Yeah.
I mean, to make sure you don't just say hi, because that's you haven't said anything. So make sure you got something to report or announce or a little tip about something, just to make it relevant. And then they appreciate it. It won't just go straight into the delete. They might read it briefly.
Okay. And then what's kind of your process for handling like new clients? Like you're given a lead or something, and like what's kind of your process for taking care of them, building rapport with a new client?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd normally, where possible, go and see them. Because you need to see like eyeball to eyeball about what it is they want out of a photographer. And you can really establish what they really want from a brief, try to articulate what it is they want, because sometimes when they put it in writing, it doesn't come across well. It's like social media. Sometimes people say things in social media that comes across badly, but actually in actual fact you're saying it laughing your head off, but you didn't know that when you read the email. So it's always good to go and see them, and then you can meet them and establish some sort of relationship, I hope, because very few photographers go and see their clients and talk to some friends of mine. The last thing they want to do is go out and have a coffee with some more or less stranger. But I don't mind it. That's what I quite like doing. But if you go and meet them, if it's a pitch situation, and you go in and make a pitch in person, I mean, chances are you're going to get it because no one else has turned up or wants to come in. And it just works that personal treatment, even these days of emails and social media and LinkedIn. The personal approach for you is the best. Well, you can arrange it over the summer months. You can arrange a small drinks party. It doesn't cost much. Put some money behind a bar and invite a bunch of your favourite clients. And they all like talking to each other anyway, because they've all got the same role. They might be in investor relations or marketing, so they all chat anyway.
Yeah.
But there's another thing. It doesn't cost much.
Very interesting. That's great. And then,
it's got to be active.
Because I feel like
if you're on a shoot on a day, think of something to do marketing wise.
I love that because it's so easy to send a message via like social media or like an email, but how much more of an impact is it going to have if you're there sitting with them enjoying an experience together of, having a drink, coffee, whatever it may be, versus, oh, I received this message. Do I really want to get back to this person? We'll see, you know?
That's right. Yeah. And hopefully you come across, you've done a bit of research about them and you know about them. You can ask them about their annual report or something you read in the press. So do a little bit of homework. So you're not just pitching photography. Basically, you want to talk them to talk to you, and you answer questions. It's not me just, having a pulpit and just talking at them.
That's a good point. That's great. I think that's a lot of valuable information for anybody wanting to, again, build a client base so that you'll kind of have that for years to come. All the follow-ups that you mentioned, that's great. You've built up somewhat of a client base, things are kind of rolling for you. How do you ensure that you're consistently delivering high-quality image and exceeding client expectations?
The key thing is understanding the brief from the client. Because sometimes it is confusing or they say something that they've read somewhere and it's not what they mean at all. So first establish that straight away. And maybe even we then use our blog as almost like a tailored portfolio. So when they're speaking out something about, maybe it's architectural photography in Europe, then we got stuff to send them. Is this what you mean when you said, interior architectural interiors? Yes, it is. That's exactly it. But not the other stuff, not so much. Even though for me it would be pretty relevant, but actually they've just nailed it and said, no, not that at all. So that's the key thing. And secondly, just being, the kit has to be good. I mean, we in the early days we were very susceptible to buying cheap, buying twice. So you have to have good file servers. We have 3 48-terabyte file servers to keep all the shoots we've ever taken are all on these 3. The third one's in a different location in case this place blows up. So we have one that's fast and active, one to backup, and the third one somewhere else. So that's important because you can retrieve any image immediately and you always respond to emails fast. So if someone sends an email, it's like a text message for us. In the office, is your reply straight away. There's no like next day kind of thing. It's just like within the next 10 minutes we always reply. I've just taken delivery of a new M2 Max so I can turn around images on site as fast as possible. Maybe it's for the newspapers or a magazine. And often they can't believe you just turned it around.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all color calibrated. We calibrate all our screens every 4 weeks here. All the laptops, all the Big Macs. We want the process to be the same for every single shoot we do. I'm not forgetting to do one little thing that's going to trip me up. I just do the same for everybody. It's the biggest shoot to the smallest shoot. They all get the same treatment. So all color calibrated with the right profiles, everything. And it's all farmed off to the servers. And then it emails me when it's all backed up. And then I can wipe the cameras. That's... over the years we've honed our little workflow and it works for us. I mean, some people would have a different tweak to the workflow, I'm sure. But for us it's quite solid.
No, that's great because, I mean, I love what you said at the beginning there. Kind of boils down to having good communication with clients to understand exactly what their vision is. So the fact that you're kind of sending examples like, so hey, is this what you're saying? Yes or no? Great, let's move forward or let's back up a little bit. Let's figure out exactly kind of what you are envisioning, because that's really giving them a better experience if you already kind of know specifically what they're after. And then the fact that you guys really take it to heart to get back to clients immediately as quick as possible, like you said, to treat emails like a text message. Like, that's brilliant, because if people are getting those fast responses, they're starting to feel, oh, hey, I'm important to them because of how quickly they're getting back to me. It's just like an extra level of service, you know?
It is, yeah. You try and think of yourself something like, Apple's good for us here has been good customer service. You think, well, what do they do? And they're always emailing me. And even Leica is very good customer service. They message me, have a very good relationship with the brand. So it's like a, well, yeah, sort of like a, you know, life is short. So if you want a nice relationship with everybody, and what would I like? Well, I'd like a fast response. I want the images to be the best quality they can be. And usually resized correctly. Someone wants in LinkedIn, we just send those free of charge, the LinkedIn size, even over and above what they want for the magazine or the website. So there's little courtesy things we do as well. And there's all, we've all organized these little presets in Lightroom. So we can just, we're on LinkedIn, sure, hit that preset. And it's stuff like that. So it's very fast. We just take about 30 presets all worked out. So whatever someone wants, you hit the preset and tweak it a bit if necessary, but then it goes pumped out straight to the server. And then we just send them off to them by either WeTransfer or Dropbox, something like that.
Right on.
Get them back out. Because once you've finished the job and cleared it, you can be on to the next one. You know, in a minute I'll have a beer. So it's all done. The shoot's tomorrow, shooting all day. I'll finish them by 7 p.m. probably. And then all good and done. The computer then take over the backups. And they just give you a little message, say it's all complete.
Very interesting. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, with your process, there's a lot of different tools, integrations that you have. I mean, it's your workflow, you know. That's actually something I'd love to ask you. What are some of the best resources that you would recommend to a group of photographers that would help them in their business?
I think software-wise, PhotoMechanic for me is the main front line of photographic tools, in terms of just culling metadata and just speed, really. It's very, very quick at rattling through a lot of images. And then obviously after that it's Lightroom, and then you need to chuck some processing resources at it, because there's nothing worse than just waiting for 10 minutes for Lightroom to ingest into a previous, when you could wait for 3 minutes if you bought a faster laptop. And it's, you can do all that kind of thing on site, so I don't tend to do that. Otherwise, I think the main thing is everybody shoots in their own way and has different cameras and different methods, but just think about how you can make it more efficient. What am I missing here in terms of why is something taking so long? Is there something I could do to improve that process? And maybe a new laptop, but maybe it's, well, actually, no, I could just use a faster card reader. So I've got the fastest card readers I could buy, and then I can plug them all in at once. And it just dumps the data onto the laptop. And that's about a minute and a half for, you know, 3 or 4 SD cards just to be dumped onto the laptop. That's a useful little thing.
Yeah.
So it's just basically just examine your own workflow and try and get it fast, make it as efficient as possible. And the clients, obviously, it just, the clients love it because you're getting their work back, and that's exactly what they want. Usually they're pretty anxious about, if it's a new photographer, they're a bit anxious about, oh God, are these going to work out? Will I look an idiot to my chairman? And then you get them back straight away, and hopefully they're happy. And then you just book you again.
Yeah.
You know, safe pair of hands, as it were. Yeah.
I think that's great advice. Where are the inefficiencies? What could be more efficient? Is there any place in my workflow where I could be saving time? Is there someone else that could do what I'm doing, but better or faster, so that would give me more time to do other
things? Maybe outsource things. My work changed. Funny, my work changed enormously when we got married, because my wife used to run a design agency, so she's very good on organisation. So I'd be hugely inefficient on a whole load of stuff. But when two of you together, somehow is it synergy? Well, it's two things and more than double. It goes a triple or quadruple, because you're suddenly, all my time's freed up. If I just do the initial cull, process in Lightroom, send them off to Sam in the office, I can go do something else. So I'm suddenly free. Whereas previously I'd be still working out how to email something or sending the client the wrong files. So as soon as she took over that role, everything became much more smoother.
That's,
and then
awesome.
You've got to charge correctly. You've got to work out, make sure you charge correctly. You don't undersell yourself. A lot of photographers say, the client says, you say, I need £100 for this. And the client says, oh my God, we can get someone to do it to 50. And then they cave immediately. Just cave in. Oh, yeah, okay, fine, I'll do it. Because they're worried about losing. I don't say, well, if you want it less, then you've got to give me something back. That's negotiation. So if you want less of budget, well, maybe you don't get the high-res JPEGs, or we don't shoot as many. Or I don't say they're as long. And then suddenly you realize that, oh, and I see, well, it's only fair. He's asking for something quid pro quo. Where Disney that is, it is £100 to find. It's extremely rare we have to give a discount for anything, which is quite the top, whatever it is we have to quote, and then it's rare that someone, if they don't, then chances are you probably wouldn't want to work. And when they come back to you 6 weeks later and say, can we reshoot it because the guy didn't do a great job? And that's happened before, we had that happened today. We had to quote for another a job that we were turned down on, and then they're going to reshoot it. So, yeah, that happens a lot too. So, I mean, yeah, have sort of pride in your own work, really.
Very interesting. That negotiation part, boy, I mean, you probably learn a lot on the job how to start handling.
You do, that's exactly it. You have to, yeah. I mean, all aspiring photographers should get a job, however briefly, in sales, maybe, or something like that, to learn how to negotiate a deal. And in a nice way, it's all pleasant, but you gotta don't give away the farm to get the job, because then you'll feel bad on the shoot. Say, well, I'm doing this really cheaply. I'm not enjoying it anymore. But if you know you're getting paid a proper amount, then you launch into a bit more enthusiasm, and you can, you know, you just feel more pride in what you do. Then you think, well, I can buy more camera kit, I can buy more lenses, or I can do stuff now with more money. It's just, you got to hold your own, really.
Totally, I love that. Just a couple questions to kind of wrap things up. I think I really understand, like, love everything that we're talking about, the negotiation part especially. I feel like a lot of time could be focused just on that part, that aspect.
Just on that, really, yeah. Yeah, so people don't negotiate, they cave in normally, yeah.
Totally. For you, Douglas, what makes a photograph truly powerful and memorable?
That's a good question. And sometimes, funnily enough, you get a shoot where maybe interesting, maybe doing shooting a, I was photographing an iron foundry in Germany. So almost in wherever you point the camera, it's going to be an interesting shot, you know. But sometimes you get, I enjoy it when the chief executive or the politician or whoever it might be is really adamant they're not going to like their picture. And they're not going to like the way they're going to be portrayed in the image or the annual report, and then you could light it correctly and then show them quickly on the laptop, and they've turned around and say, well, this is a really great portrait, I wasn't expecting this at all, sort of thing. So sometimes it gives you a bit of a curveball, but sometimes it's the ones who are most adamant that it's all going to be horrendous and awful, and you can turn them around. Even if sometimes the most simplest shot, sometimes they're the ones that give you the most satisfaction. If you're photographing, I was photographing Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, and I had 10 seconds or something. But I was pleased with the shot because it was under quite a lot of pressure. Yeah, 5 seconds is not long, 10 seconds is not long. Then I was dragged backwards by his protection squad. But at least I knew I had the image on the little camera. I shot it on a little Leica because they wouldn't want anyone else with a big camera anywhere near him. So it's a simple image, but I was very pleased with it because A, it was in focus, and B, it showed a good expression on him. So that was a very pleasing shot. But you'd look at it photographically and say it was pretty straightforward to me. But you have to imagine the time pressure and the sort of sheer pressure of photographing something like that in those 5 seconds.
That is so.
Because some of the little simplest shots can be deceiving.
Yeah,
they're actually the most satisfying.
That's incredible. So you said you had about 10 seconds to get it. And so it was just all like
they
instinct.
Said it was 10 seconds, boom. But it was, it wasn't 10 seconds. It was, I had a policeman next to you, a machine gun. And he was smiling. Yeah. I said, as long as he keeps smiling, I'm relaxed. If he suddenly got all serious and started cocking the weapon, then that'd be a different scenario. But he laughed. He said, just, guys, just leave him alone. You know, the protection squad. He's allowed to photograph and just leave him alone. So they did, but the fact it did grab you made much more of a dinner party story afterwards.
That's great. Yeah, that would no pressure, right? Just the guy with the machine gun next to you. So
he's laughing, so he's fine.
That is that's awesome. Such an incredible experience, I'm sure, for you. So, boy, but Douglas, if people are wanting to connect with you, what's going to be the best way for them to do so?
Well, any social media, really, or through the website is a contact form, or through through the email address, which is douglas@piranhaphotography.com. Is an email address.
Perfect. Boy, we appreciate your time today. I think going back through, I'm excited to put together all this for our listeners. Because of the valuable information, that's one of the reasons why I love doing these, is I'm learning the entire time myself. So I feel grateful that I've had this opportunity to speak with you, and we're looking forward to sharing this with everybody as well.
Yeah, I've been reading the blog of some of your other photographer interviews. I mean, you can get a takeaway, different takeaways from every single one of them.
Totally.
So I was just going through them. Yeah, really. And just writing some little notes about the different, different ideas and different lives that people lead in different parts of the world. You can always learn. You can always learn something from the most junior photographer, the most experienced. Sometimes a junior guy will say something, and you say, "Well, say that again." Wow. Mm. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I had not thought of that. So, that's why you should always listen to juniors as well, as because some people are a bit dismissive of new guys, which you shouldn't be. They're coming at a fresh angle.
I think that's an incredible mindset to have, to just be open to, hey, what can I always be learning from this person or from this person? Because everyone, again, has that different viewpoint. So that's awesome that you're in that mindset.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, you have to keep changing to stay the same. Hmm. If you just stick to what you know and what you do, you don't realize it, but you're actually falling back. Hmm. So if you try and learn something new today, I'm going to learn something new today, turn this off. And then and learn something new. And then you see where sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it's not. But that's okay. Even the stuff that isn't, it's good to know. So that then you can take forward the stuff that's relevant to you. So you're already sort of honing your own workflow. And things change every day. Workflows change every day. Well, up to a point, Lightroom's being updated all the time with new stuff. Capture One's updated all the time with new stuff. Computers change, cameras change. So you've got to keep on top of it, really. You just have an interest.
Totally.
And I'm always very enthusiastic about photography. So when I'm not shooting, I'm doing courses. I do courses on, say, any random topic, landscape, street photography, whatever it might be. Because then you meet people in a different sphere, and you pick things off them, and you meet them, have a beer. It's always nice.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. Learn something new every day. I think that's the perfect message to move forward with,
Thank you for listening to Retouch Up's interview series. We look forward to having you here again for the next interview.